This is VK6ARN, and you're listening to News West. WA Amateur Radio News has been serving up the news since 1931. Well, good morning and evening. My name's Phil, VK6DEV, and welcome to News West for Sunday the 21st of December 2025. Now, on with the news.
G'day from WARG, and this is WAG News for the 21st of December. We've news about TIC and 23 SEMs, but first, the next edition of the Technical and General Net will begin at 10:30 hours hotel on 146.750 and linked All-Star Hubs this morning, like every Sunday morning. See you on Perth VK6 RLM after the news and callbacks. As usual, if you're listening in the evening, it's next week. So, 23 centimetres, a new Perth repeater, active. Thanks to all who have been involved in the 23 centimetre TIC repeater project, from proposal through procurement and to now deployment. I have recently read that at least one prominent full call has a 5x9 plus reception of the repeater. I'm reliably informed that there's been a small team of Wagians who have spent hours up at TIC over Tuesday, Wednesday to get it to the current state that it is in at the time of writing this script. But by the time I send this news file to the news team, Colin VK6ACT should have been up at TIC again on Friday, doing more to tie down a few technical aspects of the build. That is his job, after all, as WAG's technical officer, I suppose. But still, shout out to the intrepid men who braved the heat of this past week to give us all a Christmas present. Well, at least those capable of 23 centimetres in Perth. Thanks to everyone, but thanks to Trevor, Glenn and Colin for the effort this week. This is not the end of the work needing to occur at VK6RTH, and in time we'll be seeking some volleys in the new year to deal with residual works and maintenance at the site. But that's something for next year. Mañana! So, until then, it is a wish for fair winds and good cheer to you and yours as we dent the bottom of the year. May we all prevail and emerge in the new year. 7-3s from VK6RRG.
The Northern Corridor Radio Group gathers for a chat, cooked breakfast, and work on current projects every Sunday morning at 8:30 a.m. Visitors and prospective new members are always welcome. The club is on Nangara Road at Whiteman Park on the first right turn after the Tonkin Highway entrance when travelling east towards Allenbrook. The club has an excellent station with multiple operating rooms, an EME station, a remote station for all members to use, club repeaters on 2 metres, 70 sems and 23 centimetres, and a bunch of other activities for members of all interests.
Well, here we are. It's almost Christmas. I'd like to say that the year has flown by rather quickly. This time last year, we had sold our house, packed up the shack and moved into temporary accommodation pending our move to Albany. And we're facing our first Christmas in our new home in Albany in a much milder climate than Perth. As many of you are likely aware, I'm Vice President of the Radio Amateur Society of Australia, commonly known as RASA. RASA is a society that exists to represent and promote the hobby of amateur radio. One way we do this is to represent amateurs of Australia to the ACMA, the regulatory body for radio communications in Australia, in order to influence their decision-making. Another way we support amateur radio is the provision of information and resources for amateurs, especially newcomers, at no cost to them. The RASA website has loads of information and also resources such as the VK Regs Handbook, the Welcome to Amateur Radio Handbook, and the Foundation Level Study Guide, and QRM.guru. The RASA website is vkradioamateurs.org. That's vkradioamateurs.org. On behalf of the Radio Amateur Society of Australia, RASA, I wish you all a very happy and safe Christmas. And of course, Good DX. I'm Bob VK6POP.
This is NewsWest from VK6ARN, produced by amateurs for amateurs, purely about the hobby of amateur communication and experimentation.
Hi, I'm Steve, VK6SJ, with this week's episode of Did You Know? Last week, we did a deep dive into design principles for radio and repeater site power supplies, but focused on battery backup. This week, we're doing episode 2, we'll look at how we charge those batteries. So you have a repeater site or a remote HF station and you have batteries. How to keep them charged without access to mains power? There are two mainstream methods used, solar and wind powered. I'm not going to go into wind powered simply because I haven't had much experience with wind power, and I'm hoping someone in the audience might have more knowledge and do an augmentation of this article. Solar power. Did I mention last week about understanding your requirements? Our requirements are relatively simple. Recharge the battery from 0% charge in 10 days. Maintain the charge of the system on a day-by-day basis. We know the consumption of the site on average because we all listened diligently last week to how we determine the consumption. Our system needs to cater for that consumption, but in addition, if we're going to also recover the system from an event such as a loss of supply for 5 days, then we need to add some capacity of the charging system to recharge the system in 5 to 10 days on top of the charging of the powering of the radios. This means that the system needs to recharge the existing load plus 10 to 20% more to also start to recharge the battery. If you have the funds, I'd recommend using a 5-day recharge design parameter, as this will also allow the system to cope comfortably with excessive use on a given day. Now let's look at the design inputs from the solar panels. There are some important parameters to look at from solar panels. They include nominal maximum power. This is the rated maximum power output from the panel. Operating voltage. This is the voltage expected at peak of a panel when connected to a load. Short circuit current. This is the current supplied to the load and is also the current you expect to measure during the peak of the day when measuring current across the panel on its own. If we convert our 34.8 amp hours of consumption at 13.8 volts DC to power, we end up with 480 watts over a 24-hour period. So let's look around for a 500-watt panel and we're good, right? Not quite. For one, we need to add 10 to 20% to recharge the battery bank after an event, so that makes 550 to 600 watts. The next step is to understand what the maximum power rating of a solar panel actually means. For most of us, purchasing new solar panels for a hobby that takes pride in doing more for less dollars means you are most likely repurposing old panels. Back in the late 90s, when I first started designing systems with solar power, an 80-watt panel delivered about 15 volts DC at 5 amps or so. The cost of a panel was in the order of about $700. Now, of course, with much increased demand and better technology, the cost has come down to around $1 a watt installed, but even cheaper are second-hand panels from refurbishment of existing domestic solar installations, which can be had for as little as $20 a panel. The issue with domestic solar panels are that they are aimed at being able to produce 240 volts AC, not 13.8 volts DC. This means that the panel voltage is now in the order of 40-plus volts DC. This represents a bit of a challenge when it comes to getting our battery voltage down to 13.8 volts DC. The latest variation of solar regulators used in the communications game are called MPPT chargers. These take a string of panels, typically three, to bring the overall panel voltage to around 150 volts, then convert the charging voltage to something suitable for either a 12, 24 or 48 volt DC bank. The advantage of these kind of regulators is that because the panel input voltage is in the order of 150 volts, they can easily regulate down to, say, 58 volts DC for more hours in the day than an old linear regulator. Now back to the panels. The rating of a panel is related to the power it can deliver per hour. A 300-watt panel can deliver nominally 300 watts per hour. This doesn't mean it will deliver 300 watts per hour while the sun is in the air. Typically around Perth, a panel will deliver the equivalent of around 4 to 5 times the rated power per day, as long as the panel is facing north and angled around 35 degrees from horizontal, and there's no clouds, etc. This means that if you string three panels in series, it will deliver 300 watts at around 45 volts, roughly 6.5 amps or 33 amp hours per day at 48 volts DC. Convert this down to 12 volts and you'll have your 133 amp hours per day, which will recharge your battery bank in 2 to 3 days, so it would be a robust design. A few other tips for building a solar panel supply for a repeater or HF remote site. Use the same panel for your array. The same panel type, that is. This is why there are often plenty of panels on the second-hand market. An upgrade on a domestic system usually ends up with a total replacement of panels, as solar panels only seem to be in production for a couple of years for each model. For maximum efficiency from the panels, face them north and at an angle from horizontal roughly equivalent to your latitude. Choose a solar regulator that is already supplying DC voltage, not AC, and look for brands from comms wholesalers. Some good brands include Morningstar, Victron and Plasmatronics, and they're all reputable RF quiet brands of regulators. Well, thanks for listening. This is Steve, VK6SJ, with another episode of Did You Know?
You're listening to News West, your weekly news from VK6ARN. If you have any items for the news, the latest they can be submitted is noon Friday. If you have an item you would like read out by the news team, please give plenty of notice to allow someone to record the item before the Friday deadline. This is Darren, VK6EK, for Amateur Radio News, VK6ARN.
A word from Weissen WA. Weissen are looking forward to being able to instigate the next Perth fox hunt. Details will be sometime early in 2026 and most likely to begin from the Women's Memorial Fountain Car Park in Kings Park. The date to be confirmed and advised, but what you can do from now till then is plan. Get your mobile set up and organized to be ready to participate when it comes. And it will arrive sooner than you think. So don't be a laggard. Failure to plan is planning to fail, as they say. 73s from Weissen and from me, Mark VK6XLZ.
Foundations of Amateur Radio. The first step in solving any problem is recognizing that there is one. In my case, the name of that problem is logging, specifically the storage and collection of my amateur radio contact logs. Just to be clear, the actual process of logging is fraught. What do you log, as in which pieces of information are germane to the purpose of logging? Do you log your own call sign or do you only collect that once per session? Do you log in UTC or in local time? If you're logging in local time, do you record where you're logging? Do you record what power level, which antenna, what radio, the battery voltage? You get the idea. Then there's when do you log? Do you log each and every session on air, weekly nets, chat sessions on the local repeater? Do you log the time when you establish the contact, once you've deciphered their call sign, or once the contact ends? And if you never wear a watch, how do you know what time it is? What do you log with? Is it using pen and paper, pencil and paper, on a sheet of A4 or A5, in a binder, in a scrapbook, in an exercise book, in a journal, a diary, on ruled, grid or on plain paper? Or do you log with a computer? And if you do that, using which of the 7 gazillion logging packages that are available to you? I'm not talking about any of those things, though I suppose you could argue that I'm addressing one of the gazillion options, but stick with me. I have, sitting on my desk, 14 different logbooks. That's not unreasonable, almost one for each year that I've been licensed. Except that these books are not in any way consistent. They're essentially bound pieces of scrap paper with log entries scribbled in the available space. Sometimes I reverse a spiral notebook just so I can avoid the spiral with my writing hand. Sometimes it's oriented in landscape, other times in portrait. Some are smaller than A5, others are foolscap and intended for accounting purposes. Next to that pile are too many empty logbooks intended for future use. Why so many, you ask? Well, it goes like this. You go to the office supply store to look for a suitable logbook. You buy it and try it. You use it for a bit and decide that you either love or hate it. If you hate it, you go back to the store to try and find another one. If you love it, your problem becomes finding an identical logbook. In a fit of inspiration, I loved the grid layout of my tiny spiral notebooks and decided that this was the one for me. But they're no longer available, so instead I bought 20 A4 7mm grid exercise books with a soft cover, which I hate, and that was after trying to get a third account book journal with a hard cover. There's also several A5 spiral-bound books, but they're too chunky for portable operation, and their spiral is annoying for logging. There's also various empty ring binders and paper ready for logging in the garage. Who knew that there are apparently multiple disconnected universes where so-called universal loose-leaf hole-punched paper doesn't fit ring binders with more than two rings? I suppose that's like different implementations of the same version of ADIF, but I'll admit that I'm bitter, and I have digressed well off topic. I will say this, stationery and I clearly have an unhealed relationship. That's not the half of it. My computer has at least 208 ADIF and Cabrillo files on it. I say at least, since that's the ones I found when looking for ADI, ADIF and CAB files. Removing identical files nets me 171 text files, which I'm pretty sure are all log files, 50,000 lines, but that's with some having a one line per contact and others having a dozen, depending on which software wrote the file. It's going to take a moment, since those 208 files are scattered among 74 different directories. Then there's the files that WSJTX and FLDigi create. But right now I'm not sure what the extensions for those are. I think one is called all.txt, and looking inside it helpfully does not have a year in the log data. So that's fun. My computer also has logs in CQRLog, XLog and VKCL, probably others. Then there's the logs I have online. The log for FTroop is a single spreadsheet. It has nearly 10,000 entries. I know that there's other files online and likely in other places, like the various clubs I've operated at. Fortunately or not, most of those were done with the club call sign, so I'm calling those out of scope, at least for now. Then there's the entries in LOTW, ClubLog, EQSL, probably QRZN and likely more. It all started out so innocently. I made my first contact in 2011 and forgot to log it. Since then, I've been extolling the virtues of making sure that everyone around me logs their first contact. Meanwhile, I've been pulling my hair out trying to make sense of the fragmented disaster that is represented by logging in amateur radio. I'll take responsibility for my own mess, but I have to point the finger at my predecessors who still cannot agree on what to log, and how to store or convert it, despite a century of logging. It's not for the want of trying. It's that the nature of logging in this hobby is less than consistent, to say the least. Each contest wants their log in some special format. Logging tools pick their own format that's incompatible with that of another tool. If you're lucky, that incompatibility is obvious, but more likely than not, it's subtle. Among all those sources of log entries that I've mentioned are undoubtedly going to be duplicate contacts. There's going to be incorrect transcriptions, inaccurate record keeping, wrong times, missing years, and all the other things that come to mind when you describe a data entry problem. Fortunately, I have some experience with data entry. It was the transcribing of a recent POTAR or Parks on the Air log that triggered an insight for me. Faced with the reality of entering contacts into something electronic, based on a bound notebook with log entries scribbled all over it, basically a pretty piece of scrap paper, I needed to solve a specific problem, namely the fact that I was entering this data for another amateur, who would be uploading it into the relevant POTAR system. I had no idea what the field requirements were, didn't know where they'd be uploaded to, nor what format they needed. So I improvised, figuring that getting both the logged and inferred data into some table would be a good start. So I used a spreadsheet. After completing the task, I had my epiphany. What if I logged all my contacts in a spreadsheet? I can sort it by whichever column I want. I can have as many columns as I need, a squillion rows if I make that many contacts. I can convert it to whatever format the next contest manager desires, and I can back it up like any other spreadsheet. Better still, it's software agnostic. If I suddenly discover the next best logging tool since toasted sliced bread with creamed honey, I can convert my sheet into something that's required. Better yet, I can extract the data from that tool and put it back into the spreadsheet after discovering the author has a propensity of making random changes that are incompatible with my worldview. So, spreadsheet. Oh yeah, I won't be using Excel. It has a, let's call it, nasty habit of converting anything that remotely resembles a date into one, even when you don't want it to. Clippy lives on, apparently. I'll likely photograph each page, and to keep track of which logs I've entered, I'll put a coloured dot on a page when I've entered it into my spreadsheet. Once a logbook is entered, I'll mark it in some way too. Then I'll have to massage the existing electronic data. I can't wait. How have you solved your contact logging problem? I'm Ono, Victor Kilo 6, Foxtrot Lima, Alpha Bravo.
This is VK6ARN, and you're listening to News West.
I was fiddling around in my shack the other day, as you do, and at the same time, also as many of us do, I was listening to a QSO on 80 metres. There was the usual chat about the weather not being the same as it was this time 10 years ago, how there's nobody on the bands these days, and just as well because the bands are dead anyway. I heard about two hip replacements, a triple bypass, and a knee reconstruction. You know, the everyday stuff of an ageing amateur population. Then there it was. Someone was saying the unspeakable. Father Christmas isn't really an amateur. Father Christmas was never on air, and that it was really our parents working the bands after we went to sleep. I was shattered to hear this. Could it be true? A whole belief system challenged in one careless QSO. Well, I wasn't going to take this lightly, so I set out to discover the truth, the real truth about Father Christmas. After all, I'd just lodged my Christmas wish list with him. What if he was suddenly not really an amateur? I asked Saint Google if Father Christmas was an amateur radio operator. Google returned 1 million non-results in 0.75 seconds. So I asked on air. I called on several bands and returned no results. Nobody answered my calls. Does this mean that there was nobody on air, or did it mean that nobody was willing to discuss the possibility that Father Christmas was an amateur radio muggle? A wall of silence. Now I have this vision of amateur radio operators worldwide, snuggled up in bed, waiting for sleep and the visit from Santa. They will dream of their Christmas stocking bulging with amateur radio goodies while desperately attempting to expunge the thoughts of doubt and disappointment. Is Father Christmas an amateur radio operator? I think he is. I'm Bob VK6POP.
Good morning, this is Roy, VK6X-Ray Victor, with this week's helpline for the 21st of December 2025. Happy Christmas, everyone. It's almost Christmas, another week, and today I have the following for you. I have a receiver, a transceiver, in fact. It's a Papa Mike 100 with full manual and currently programmed with four UHF frequencies, amateur frequencies, that is, but it's easily reprogrammable. Asking $60, that comes from Keith, VK6 Papa Tango. Keith's email address is keithpeterson962@gmail.com. I'll spell Kilo Echo India Tango Hotel Papa Echo Tango Echo Romeo Sierra Oscar November figures 962@gmail.com. That's all I have for you for this morning. Once again, I wish you all the best for the festive season, and a happy new and prosperous new year. This is Roy VK6X-Ray Victor. If you have any items for next year, please contact me, or next week even. Email address VK6X-Ray Victor@bigpond.com. VK6X-Ray Victor@bigpond.com. 7-3, have a good time. Catch you later. See you next year.
Well, that's the news for this week. Stand by now for the callbacks. Or visit vk6.net. 7-3.